Greetings from Earth, and welcome to the Creative Cosmos. I'm your host, Christopher Moores. Broadcasting live tonight from Paradise, California. Greetings from Earth, everybody, and welcome to the Creative Cosmos Radio Show. On Fridays, we're going to bring you interviews with some of the world's most interesting people, and today I'm going to be welcoming onto my show Rajesh Singh. And if you want to follow along, as always, go visit the Creative Cosmos website at www.creativecosmos.org. And let me tell you a little bit about Rajesh Singh. He's the author of Human Species and Beyond. He was born in Agra, UP, India in 1956. He attained his bachelor's degree in humanities and his master's degree in political science from Allahabad University, India. Singh currently serves as joint secretary for the government of the state of UP, India. His childhood interest in spirituality inspired him to write his first book, Human Species and Beyond. Research in several scientific and religious disciplines, such as Upanishads of the East, the Holy Bible, cosmology, quantum physics, and genetics, confirmed his belief on the evolution of the human species. This book combines ideas of science and religion by tying the messages of scripture to the evolution of mankind. He hypothesizes that mankind has not yet fully evolved, and the vices in life stem from a lack of values held by the global population. He looks into the next stages of human evolution and predicts not only where human existence started, but where it is going. Singh currently resides in Meerut, UP, India, near New Delhi, with his wife and three children. He enjoys the study of developmental infrastructure and ancient scriptures and modern science. When Singh is not working, he enjoys reading, music, and movies. So I'm happy to welcome to the show today, Rajesh Singh. Welcome.
So nice of you. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Oh,
thank
my
you
pleasure.
Very much indeed.
Yeah, glad to have you. And it's a pleasure for me to speak with someone in India as well, as India has been a big influence in my own personal development and spiritual life. So, good to have you. And I really enjoyed looking over your book and reading through your book, Human Species and Beyond. It's quite a in-depth and interesting read. So thank you for sending me a copy of that, and I look forward to hearing some more about your thoughts in regards to humanity and where we're going and the way certain things are playing out. And why don't we start with talking a little bit about how science and religion are meeting in the middle these days.
Yeah, the important thing that has been brought out in this book is, as you pointed out in the beginning, it is basically to do about the evolutionary scheme of life, the way we have evolved during the course of this 3.5 billion years period, and we have come into existence as human biologies. But then the question that arises, that if you can rise up from the amoeba life to human life within a time span of 3.5 billion years, where do we go hence in the next 8 billion years, which happens to be the age of planet Earth according to cosmologists? And it is to, basically the purpose of the book is not merely evolution. It has to, it is an effort to look into the spiritual aspects of life, because the process of evolution cannot be understood merely in terms of, you know, scientific concepts, but also in terms of the spiritual orientation of life. You have to understand it. And as we do this, we begin to realize what exactly are the spiritual dimensions of life that helps us a lot in dealing with the life the way it exists here, and the way we should be living life to have peace in our heart and mind, so that we live better and in a more, you know, spiritually profound manner.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. And early on in the book, you bring up how a lot of people are still really influenced by their society or the context that they found themselves in, or beliefs, or even just still see the world as it looks through their five senses. So I'd like to hear some illustrating thoughts on that topic and how we can learn to get beyond these limitations.
Oh, yes. It is basically the life to us is a mental construction. It is we assimilate, you know, our experiences. Our experiences are sense-based, and the stimuli which we get from the environment decides our mental outlook and our response to the society. This is a mechanical aspect of life, the stimuli from the environment and our reactions to them.
Mm-hmm.
But then there is something else which is ensuring this interaction with the environment, the consciousness inside you, which basically is a spiritual phenomenon. We have to learn, and we should learn, that most of the stresses, most of the discordant notes, most of the problems in our personal or social life, they are born because we confuse this mechanical process with the essence of life.
Right.
But the life is not merely this mechanical process. It is something else. It is kind of, you know, a spiritual element also, which has been ensuring this interaction with the environment, and which has brought about this environment. Once you realize this, you also get seized with a very sure feeling that there should be some purpose, a purpose which goes beyond this writing on the wall, between, goes beyond what is happening around us. And there has got to be some purpose behind this mundane purpose of life. And then you begin to grow in terms of spirituality, because then you can draw inferences, you can draw conclusions, you begin to learn from your interaction with the environment.
Yeah. And a lot of the times on Creative Cosmos, we talk about meditation and how getting that space from the stimuli or input, as you say, just learning to get a disconnect there, so it doesn't shape you, so it doesn't compel you, but you get space so that you can be aware of that, yet you can also be aware of that greater scheme of things of which you were just referring to.
Oh, yes, yes. It is because, you know, unless you can really detach yourself from the immediate environment, you can't discover your inner powers, your inner, you know, spiritual stimulus, which is already there inside you. You have to go beyond space and time. And as we do in meditation, basically we focus on something. As we meditate, we go beyond space and time. Whatever practice one adopts, whatever meditational methodology is opted for, basically it leads to you zero in on a level of primal consciousness which goes beyond space and time.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes you to a nominal divine world of energy. And this divine world of energy, in fact, controls the material world. And we begin to realize it is not merely something retiring into the cavities of life which have nothing to do with the outside environment. But no, it's not like this. It's basically something you begin to explore within yourself, dimensions of life which are master forces, which are master forces of this life on material plane. And it is through the process of meditation that you begin to realize how to control your own life.
Mm-hmm.
In a much better way, in a much, much better manner. And for the good of all, not merely your own good, but the good of the society at large. So the two things that come in tandem with each other. On the one hand, as you meditate, you improve in terms of consciousness, and on the other hand, you have a kind of reciprocity with the world around you, where you are more generous, you are more benevolent, you are more giving, and it is the element of peace which becomes the dominant force in your mind and heart.
Yes, great explanation there, and I agree completely. You know, meditation, it just keeps growing, and consciousness keeps growing and bringing you to, you know, more and more self-mastery and awareness of things, which then, and also you're talking about going into that energy field where you're feeling more connected with things, and as you start looking at the world that way and beginning to interplay with the world, you start seeing almost a whole other language, a whole other way of communication start to evolve, and you start recognizing some of these universal principles. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, that is again a very important aspect of spiritual life, because it is not there is this world and there is that world, the unseen, invisible world, which is the higher world, in which things stand more interconnected, and things are bound together, a peace, and it is for the good of all. Because as you grow in terms of consciousness, your consciousness, as you rightly pointed out, becomes universal. You get deeper into the cavities of consciousness, and it is kind of going into a bottomless pit, as pointed out by Holy Bible. This book, Human Species and Beyond, is an effort to connect the scriptures to the sciences. Generally, it is so believed by the people that sciences and spirituality are different, they are separate from each other. But the fact of the matter is that they are not separate and away from each other. The scriptures come out with certain basic postulates which have been elaborated in the sciences in a more trustworthy manner. And our senses, as we said early on, they accumulate their experiences from the environment. But then the verification in the domain of science comes from the sense-based faculties. On the other hand, in the spiritual domain, when you are in a state of meditation or in a state of trance or in a state of concentration, you accumulate your knowledge in the form of a divine flash, in the form of an eros. The virtues of soul help you to gather the empirical inferences, which becomes quite reliable for your inner being. The effort of Human Species and Beyond is to disclose what exactly has been the pattern in the Holy Bible and also in the Upanishads of the East, and to show in the light of the concepts of science like quantum physics and cosmology that the two put together, they are not separate and away from each other. They don't oppose each other at all.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. You know, even my whole show here, Creative Cosmos, is designed to show the unity of like Western art culture, and which also includes the scientific constructions and the Eastern wisdom. And you know that I love how you do that, and you take kind of science and you move it into that realm in the way you describe it, in the way you verify it with these sources, and the way you draw again and illustrate how there is a unity there, and that we can incorporate some of that mystical element, but still put it in a way that we can look at as verifiable and, like as you said, reliable, and something is almost a roadmap for the development of humanity in the future.
Oh yes, it is the development of humanity which is more important for us, and the good thing is that as you focus on the possibility of looking into the life of human species from the angle of futuristic development, from the angle of getting into full play of the potentialities which are embedded in human biology, then you also realize that it shows us a light for tomorrow. It becomes the guiding lotus star for tomorrow. You become appreciative of the fact that in the process we begin to explore universal values, cosmic values, creative cosmos.
Yeah.
As we can put it. and we begin to realize that the values, the contemporary values of our society are merely, you know, a transitory element of life. Ultimately, we have to go somewhere else. We have to evolve in a better lot of society, in a human race, in a better lot of destiny. And we have to reciprocate to the call of tomorrow. And then we should be doing something to adopt our life to that ultimate end of life, which is not merely these 100 years or 200 years, but thousands of years or millions of years.
Yeah.
Now, often as I talk to the people, sometimes the question is raised as to how come anything which is going to happen millions, or if you go by the science of cosmology, billions of years later, influence our life here and now. The contention is that it is evolution. The scheme of evolution is important for us. If you care for your posterities, if you care for the generations to come, why to care only for one or two generations to come? We have to really encompass the total scheme of things and to modulate our life according to the requirements of tomorrow. That helps us. That helps us in the sense that many of the values of our society happen to be, you know, contemporary values of the society. But then we have also to realize that life is not merely this immanent life. Life is also that transcendental life. As I said, sciences and spirituality coexist. So the transcendental and the immanent coexist. And it is something which is to be understood in a deeper sense. It is to be understood in a deeper sense because, like, for example, let us take it from the domain of quantum physics.
Okay.
A particle. It is a particle and it is a wave. And the moment you begin to look at a particle as a movement of a wave, then this wave becomes an endless regime. It has a history. It is a bottomless pit and connects you immediately to the point of the Big Bang. The energy wave is not merely, it is a functional order. It is a functional arrangement which connects the immanent with the transcendental. Similarly, in life, inside you and me, there is an element which is transcendental, yet there is an immanent biology that, which is basically energy in the form of knots of energy coming together, and we call human beings human beings. But then they have a basic, deeper stuff which is spiritual. So the immanent and the transcendental coexist. So in the value domain also, we begin to realize that most of the values are transitory, and that helps us because many of the discordant notes in the society and between nations and between human beings can be done away with if only we realize that there is something else too. It is not really the writing on the wall, but the element of life beyond.
Yeah, and which reminds me of how you were describing in your book a concept of, which I describe as well, but in maybe a little different way, but how there's that the singularity, like anything that is manifested here and is playing out in one way, has kind of, I often call it like the mythos or the idea of, that embodies it before it starts splitting up and coming down through the realms. And let's see, how did you put that? Well, you also emphasized how it's not us, you know, how the old view is maybe us reaching up into spirit, but how you're reminding us how we're pulling spirit down and bringing it into the world.
Now, would you please come again? It was not distinctly audible.
Oh, sorry. Might be a little mic thing. Yeah, I was just speaking of how you said there is a singularity behind things that get manifested in the physical realm, like how the physical realm is like the piece, and like you take humanity, and if you go up to the higher soul level, you can feel humanity, like the potential, or all of it, or the singular concept, and how we are drawing from that and bringing it down and into the physical world.
Oh, yes. You see, there is, as I said, there is this world, this visible world, and there is the world of invisible energy. But the invisible energy is more organized. This is beyond space and time. It connects us all together. We think we are separate human beings, and we are trained into psychology right from our childhood. We think it is me versus non-me. One of the things which human species and beyond has tried to focus on is that we should learn to realize that we are bound to the same common energy reservoir. The body of energy, the world of energy, the divine world of energy, the nominal world of energy, which is binding us all together. And it is not merely that it is an ideational situation we should be aware of. It is our physical necessity also. We can become better human beings when we begin to realize that there is a scheme of life which places us more interconnected than we think we are. Jesus said, love thy neighbor. Now, it is not merely loving the neighbor living next door. It is something else. It is like, you know, when we look at it from the angle, from the evolutionary angle, the most of the advancement from amoeba life to human biological life has come about by the participation of various genera and species accumulated together, bound together, appeased by the working of nature. And it has been shown in this book, Human Species and Beyond, we have discussed scientifically as to how the plexi are built over ages. There are seven major dominant plexi in human body, and each of them comes from seven major dominant regimes of life, from atomic to molecular to vegetational to reptile to animality to sapiens to human life. So, ringbird, I think that was something we missed on. So, these seven major dominant regimes, they contribute to the formation of human life. It has not come into existence all of a sudden. The Holy Bible also describes about the seven stages of evolution. Seven days are not 7 days, they are seven stages. And then, like Rig Veda from the Oriental philosophy says, man, indeed, you are the universe. So we are the universe because what we are, in fact, is not merely this physical self, but the functional mechanism inside takes us beyond space and time, and it is a functional arrangement. It is not a structural thing which has come into existence at some point of time and which has passed away and things exist the way they are. No, it is a functional arrangement. As I said, the energy keeps rising from that bottomless pit and reaches out to us. And these seven dominant regimes of life are even today, they are bound together. The entire cosmos is one scheme. And when we talk about the human mind or human vital or human physical, there are three major dimensions of life: mental, vital, and physical. Then what do we exactly mean by this? It is not merely human mind. It is it's part of the cosmic mind. And that cosmic mind does not begin here at my level, but then even an atomic configuration has a mind of its own. It takes certain number of electrons, it rejects certain number of electrons. So, point of mentality, vitality, and physicality. Look at an atomic configuration. Look at the atom. Atom has got not merely that mentality, it has a physicality, it has a structure, then it has a vitality. The electrons are buzzing around the nucleus. So you are prana force, your life force. You breathe. You say animation is the sign of life, but then the animation is there inside atom also. What I am saying is that this total evolutionary spiral of life begins early on and is part of the cosmic mind, cosmic writer, and cosmic physical. And it is taking us towards a preordained end of a supramental life. We are not going to stop here. And the moment we become appreciative of this element, we begin to realize we are more interconnected, events are more interconnected, because all energy is basically consciousness, and it is our consciousness which is giving birth to events. That is how it goes and moves.
Yeah, brilliant. Nice description. And so once... Yeah, you speak of this, of where we're heading, and can you tell me just the descriptions of the man of the future that has incorporated this? Tell me a little bit about that person, about how that person will look at the world and the things that are alike with the old ways and the things that are totally different in the way life will be carried forth in consciousness in the human body.
Yeah, consciousness in human body, in fact, is a divine consciousness. It is not just material consciousness. We have to really connect this to understand as to what is the primal source of our consciousness. Where does it come from? And we have, up to this stage of human civilization growth and the growth of sciences and philosophy, we have not really been able to understand precisely what exactly the consciousness, the element of consciousness is. The human species and beyond is an effort to exploring to a new dimension of consciousness. And it says that consciousness is that bridge of immortality from this phenomenal world to that divine world, and it is the passage of the divine through the creator of the man to the phenomenal world. It is an unbroken chain of movement of consciousness from that world to this world, and that is one reason the consciousness cannot be divided between species and between the genera and the various kingdoms of life. It's all one consciousness. That is why your cat in the house, your dog in the house responds to your parts. When the people sitting distantly apart, they begin to realize what their friend is thinking, what his father is thinking about him, what doing about him. So it's one consciousness. It's a pool of consciousness which is basically embedded at one point, and things are not separate and away but bound together.
Yes. Wow, that's great. And that'll be a great point. Usually in the Creative Cosmos show, we play a tune at the bottom of the hour that goes with the theme of what we've been talking about. And I picked out a tune today called How Did Man Come Around? So we're going to take a little tune break here, and we'll be back in just a moment with author of Human Species and Beyond, Rajesh Singh. So enjoy the tune, How Did Man Come Around? We'll be right back.
How did man come around? How did man come around? Was it something I said? Was it something I did? Or was it something simply hanging in the air? How did sight come from sound? Word of life.
All right, welcome back to the Creative Cosmos Radio Show, everybody. It's been my pleasure so far this hour to interview Rajesh Singh, author of the book Human Species and Beyond, and he's in India right now and speaking to us live. So welcome back, Rajesh, to the show. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's great to have you and great to have your perspective. You know, I feel that all across the spectrum in society right now, people are injecting this consciousness or this awareness of spirit into all sorts of different fields, and of course that's happening in a major way in science and spirituality, how they're finding out that they're describing the same thing, and that's a big theme in your book. So you want to just give us a quick recap of that idea of how science and spirituality are meeting in the middle, and we'll go on from there, because I think that's just such an important point.
Oh, yes. It is about time, you know, that we begin to realize that the difference between sciences and spirituality has begun to dissolve. It is already dissolving. And particularly so in areas like quantum physics. Quantum physics is dealing with the life inside atom, and cosmology is dealing with the life in the universe. And both of these sciences are resting their postulates upon one basic premise, that what meets our eyes, in fact, is not the last and the ultimate thing. It might be a deception. And like we began to change our theories about the movement of tangible bodies, and science came of age as it switched over from the Newtonian science to Einsteinian science, where Einstein said that the movement is of grass bodies is to be calculated in terms of space, time, and gravity. And it gave us two theories of general and special theory of relativity. So the movement is, in fact, is a deceptive movement. Existence, in fact, is a deceptive existence. What happens here and now, in fact, is rooted in something which is beyond in terms of space and time. It is the manifested regime of life which we are given to. We are given to the givens of life as of now. And we have failed to realize up to this point of time that spirituality and sciences are not different from each other. Spirituality was the prophets and those who really steep into the spirit of life, they could envision the future of mankind and also the deeper aspects of the functional mechanism of life. It came to them straight. Now, science required proof. It required foolproof methods. It was based on science, and it believes only in things which can be verified, first mathematically, theoretically, then experimentally. Mm-hmm. So now science is reaching a stage where postulates of quantum physics have begun to tell us that life is not merely this life, but things are more interconnected. They are more, you know, responsive to each other. They respond to each other in a way which is not easily explicable for us, and very difficult to comprehend. But then, they say that kind of relationship between the seen and the unseen exists. And this quantum physics does this in terms of you know, the fields which exist inside, which work on the terrestrial plane from atomic life to any other life. Mm-hmm. It tells us that the way I have put in human species and beyond, I have spoken about the seven major dominant fields. There is only one grand unified field, which is which is nothing but transformation of the divine world preceding the cosmological mind into the phenomenal world, which resurfaced the cosmological bank. So grand unified field is the interconnecting link, but there are seven variants of grand unified field. The strong nuclear field, which controls the transactions inside the atoms, weak nuclear field, which negotiates the interconnections between atoms, which you call molecules, and then the molecular configurations leading upward towards the vegetational kingdom, which is more dominated by the electromagnetic field, and the reptile and animality and winged bird kingdom, which are the energy regimes which are more conscious of space and time. You see animation in animal life, and you see them running, you see them opting for conscious choice. So that is how life grows, and the seven fields come to manifest themselves gradually over a period of time, but they all are simple variants of a grand unified field, which is nothing but universal divine consciousness. So that is how sciences and spirituality and scriptures, they are coming together, and a new thought process is emerging, which can one day lead to a much more advanced form of science, which also rests upon. Now here, there is something else also. Okay. All sciences, basically, you have to depend upon intuition. You have to depend upon compassion to postulate your theories in science. And in sciences also, theories come first and verification comes later. So if you have seen that in sciences also, over a period of say 2, 3 or 4 decades, things change upside down, and theories are rejected or accepted and changed also. So if that happens in a time span of 100 years or 200 years, then you should obviously give a longer span of life for the spiritual truth to be verified. It cannot be done in 200 or 300 years. But then, now we are reaching a stage where this verification has begun to happen. It is, and the two domains are coming together.
Yeah, and when you look at it that way, it's as if today we're building upon the work of the great mystics and scientists, because like all throughout your book, you reference, like, say, Buddha 1 minute, then Einstein the next, then Nietzsche 1 minute, and then Jesus the next, and all these people that we had seen as seers and philosophers, in one kind of way, they're almost, we see what they did in a different light today as we put all the pieces together and take up the mission to move it forward ourselves.
Yeah, that is there. That is there. That is there. In fact, most of the theories and inventions have had a deep impact upon human life, and major inventions are in the form of the divine will, I would say. It doesn't come through without the divine grace working and manifesting itself to the surface of human life. Mm-hmm. We personally, in fact, are greatly indebted to the scientists who have done a lot, and with instrumentalities through which the truth came out. Much more, however, has yet to come forward, has yet to manifest itself. And I have a very sure feeling that in the times to come, we will reach a stage where most of the theories of spirituality, most of the concepts and beliefs of spirituality will be borne out by sciences, and the two will dovetail in a way that life will become a much larger concept than it is today.
Yeah, which in itself, bringing that together, it reveals the path to that new age or future humanity, to the, like you say, the person who's not just coming in 50 years or 100 years, but the person who's coming for 1,000 years. And I personally believe that once that is fully externalized and everything is seen as it is, then the earth itself will be in a position where it will be sustainable, because applying that which we've learned through this process as a humanity, through the ages will eventually incorporate the method that works, so to speak.
Yeah, because, you know, in fact, the life began with a 24-hour caterpillar, and it has grown over a period of time into something else. It is now a 100-year human life. So our perspectives, in fact, are limited perspectives as on this. We think life is the imminent life, or the as we get into, for example, in the discipline of history. History is the known history of the past few thousands of years, and most of the history, which is an authentic thing, in fact, belongs to the last 2,000 years only. We have respected perspectives. We fail to realize. But when you get into cosmology, or when you get into scriptures, the perspectives get elongated. They become much larger. Mm-hmm. Like you begin to talk about the cosmological bang, which took place 12 to 14 billion years ago. When you talk about life as such, you begin to talk about the next 8 billion years, which happens to be the age of planet Earth. So the important thing is, as you go into the subtle elements of life, the perspectives become wide open, and they begin to agitate our consciousness to a new level, where we begin to understand that talking in terms of these limited perspectives, like doing good to the people, or like, you know, depravity or deprivation or prosperity. For example, like digressing from this discussion a little, we talk about prosperity. We talk about, you know, raising the consumption the levels in our life and making it more qualitative, qualitatively richer. The point is, there is no definition of prosperity. Like, it is just a matter of what kind of values we have in our life. It is because of the norms of prosperity. Now, prosperity itself is defined, as I have shown in my book, Human Species and Beyond. Now, prosperity itself is defined as having this or not having that. Is deprivation. Like kids having this set of toys and another kid not having that. That digresses our attention from the purpose of life. We are always busy trying to achieve this or that level of material success. Mm-hmm. And we never get a chance to know who we are and what is it we are here for. Right. Life is not these worldly positions. It is much more. It is a grand plan ordained by nature, by God, to evolve on terrestrial plane, a consciousness akin to the divine.
Yeah.
That is why it has taken us from this level to that level. And we have to know that grand design before we can really ensure our smooth, you know. You know, unless we know what we are going to grow into, that is one of the purposes of the Human Species and Beyond when it talks about the coming age of supramental species. Unless we know where we are going to grow into, and this total buzz of human civilization becomes an aimless buzz. Because prosperity or deprivation or this national interest, nations, it is good to love your nation, but why should you love, stop at the boundary of nation? You must love the entire human race. So my contention is that these things will be done away with. We will have peace inside us, first of all, and then in the society and between nations, if and if only we have values which are universal values, which are beyond space and time, which look into the future, and which guarantee our smooth transition into the next phase of life. Somebody was asking me very recently, as I was talking to some audience, someone asked me that if all life is divinely ordained, if all of us have come into existence because of under the shelter of the divine will, why should we intervene and make deliberate options? Yeah, very nice question. But then the point is that you have to make a deliberate choice now, because the previous life regimes were there under the sheltered automaticity of nature. Now you have become a deliberate partner in the divine scheme of things. You have to make your options. You have to decide for the future course. And this new empowerment, this power which you have now of evolved consciousness is a double-edged weapon. You can also make wrong choices. Then it can obviously bring the extinction of our species at a sooner through environmental imbalance or whatever. And environmental imbalance is also coming into existence because of our digression from the normal natural life and overemphasis upon consumption and over-industrialization. Industrialization is very good because unless the spirit interacts with the environment through inventions, through industrialization, through new modes of life, it will not grow. But then, where to stop? What kind of values can stop it? That is the important question. And we have to ensure a kind of life which really takes us beyond in a very smooth way.
Yeah, I think that, the way that, you know, one thing that goes on, goes with that is we find our own personal fulfillment when we find our role in serving that cause which you just described. I mean, that's where the peace inside comes, when we find our place in that more universal vision of life. You know, we're no longer bound to that worldly conditional realm where we might fill just one small role, but we see a greater role in the expression of the will of humanity, the direction of humanity. And when we're doing that, we will then feel we are in our place, and we will feel that peace, which we'll then carry forth into the world.
Oh, yes, that is there. Knowing thyself is knowing humanity. If you know yourself in the right perspective, if you know yourself spiritually, just recognizing your social station, your social position, or the group of people you interact with, or the society you are in. In fact, it's not enough. Let us grow beyond these bounds. Let us begin to realize that power which is shimmering at our back. Let us connect our being to that cosmic being. To that cosmic feeling, to that cosmic mind, cosmic vital, and the cosmic physical. Oh, the moment you do this, then you can serve your fellow man better. It's not a question of service alone, but the purpose of that service. And the purpose of this service is not merely prosperity or doing away with the grief-stricken life. You have to take the entire thing. There is an inherent momentum. All life, according to the Oriental philosophy, is anand. All life is bliss. And we have to move towards that blissful state, towards that era where all of us, human beings, will get into that golden millennium where our spiritual selves will begin to dominate the material life. And also all of us will be happy. There shall be no pain. There shall be no death. As I have said in one of the chapters in Human Issues and Beyond, that is a recap from the Holy Bible, in which I have quoted excerpts from the evidence from the Holy Bible, where Jesus says, "And then there shall be no death, there shall be no pain, there shall be no tears, I shall wipe them away." So we have to think about that course of human life, that humanity working in one dimension and the whole thing becoming unidimensional with, you know, fissiparous and antagonistic nodes dying down and the life becoming a much larger, compassionate thing. That is what we have to ensure.
Yes, yeah, I agree completely. And well, thank you for your work in bringing that message out there to the people at large and just bringing into people's awareness these concepts and this direction. And can you tell us all where we're starting to get to where we have to wrap up the show here, but I want to make sure you get a chance to tell everyone where they could pick up a copy of Human Species and Beyond.
My book is available on it is available in Barnes and Nobles and Borders and all the retail stores in the United States of America and in Canada. And thank you very much indeed for having me on your show. It was a wonderful experience talking to you and to the people across to you and the great service that you are rendering to the cause of humanity. It is simply great.
Well, thank you. And yeah, you're welcome back anytime. And we're going to wrap up the show today with another song, and I'd just like to say, of course, this is BBS Radio, and you can always find us at bbsradio.com. So thank you again, Rajesh, for your work and for joining us, and we'll sign out tonight with a song, The Miracle of Love on the Astral Plane.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.